I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the Mounds Lake Project. The project has precipitated lively discussion throughout Indiana. Proponents say it will aid sustainability efforts for generations to come by providing a reliable source of water for central Indiana. Opponents say that damming the White River will have a severe environmental impact. My guests are Tim Maloney, Senior Policy Director of the Hoosier Environmental Council, Tony Fleming, a geologist and author of Exhaustive Groundwater Atlas of Marion County, and Chad Pick, Project Specialist for the Corporation for Economic Development in Madison County. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the statehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the proposed Mounds Lake Project. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Tim Maloney, who is the Senior Policy Director of the Hoosier Environmental Council, and Chad Pigg, who is Project Specialist for the Corporation for Economic Development in Madison County. And joining us by phone is Tony Fleming, a geologist and author of an Exhaustive Groundwater Atlas of Marion County. Welcome, all of you. It's good to have you here.
Thank you, John.
Thanks.
Well, I'm going to start, Chad, so that there are some people, no pun intended, so we can start at the ground level here and make sure everybody understands what's going on. Could you talk a little bit about what the proposed project is, what it would do?
Sure. Basically, the idea behind the project is to create a lake that would serve to meet water resource needs for central Indiana for generations to come. The lake would be constructed, would be created by constructing a dam just west of Scatterfield Road in Anderson, Indiana, which would create a 7-mile reservoir that would work its way back east into Delaware County. Essentially, what we were looking at here is how can we create a resource that will serve the entire central Indiana region. So that's the very quickly what the idea is.
Okay. And, Tim, I'm going to ask you then, obviously, Hoosier Environmental Council has registered significant concerns about this proposal. Could you talk about what those concerns are?
Sure, John. We have looked at the project in depth and clearly believe that it's the wrong idea for the West Fork White River and not really the best thought out plan for our water supply either. And let me begin with the rather substantial environmental impacts that would occur from flooding 7 or more miles of the West Fork White River. It's a very high quality stream corridor. Good water quality, a high-quality warm water fishery with over 57 species of fish recorded in the West Fork White River, a very natural floodplain hardwood forest habitat up and down the river, nearly a square mile and a half of very nice hardwood forest, hundreds of acres of floodplain wetlands along that stretch of the river. It's heavily used by canoeists and kayakers and anglers, and along that stretch also is Mound State Park, which protects some very great quality prehistoric earthworks, the mounds there from the prehistoric Adena and Hopewell cultures, a very unique and rare fen community, plant community in the park that would be flooded by the proposed lake, as would all of the lower lying parts of Mound State Park would be underwater. So we're concerned about that impact as well. So the the environmental impacts are very substantial from this project, and if you look at the water supply question as a reason for proceeding with the reservoir, we just think it's very premature to be embarking on a nearly $500 million water supply project when we haven't really fully evaluated water supply needs in central Indiana. And if you look at what Citizens Water is doing, they have they've accounted for their supply needs over the next 25 years. They can add 82 million gallons a day of water supply and do it at a cost that's just about one-fifth of the cost of building this reservoir. So I think for all those reasons, we don't think the reservoir is the right idea, and as a result, we've proposed an alternative plan, what we call the Mounds Greenway, to protect the river instead of develop it like that.
Okay, and we will get to all of that. Tony, put this in some larger perspective for us, would you? I mean, is our water supply in central Indiana imperiled in the short term, in the long term? Could you give us kind of the big picture, and then we'll bring it back down into closer relief?
I think in the short term, there's not a huge issue. You may be aware that a couple of months ago, the Chamber of Commerce put out a water resource study of Indiana. It was sort of a broad brush study, but it did focus on central Indiana, and they looked at historical growth and water use and projected it out into the future. And things are good right now, but if the assumption that we need, that the population is going to continue growing as it has in over the past quarter century, then yes, there will be a need for additional water capacity. And I want to emphasize that term, capacity. That does not mean, having a shortage of water capacity does not mean we're short of water. Water capacity refers to the intakes and treatment facilities and so forth needed to bring a supply of water into the distribution system. Right now, our capacity about meets or slightly exceeds demand, but there is no shortage of water per se. There's lots of groundwater in the alluvial aquifer system beneath the White River. In fact, the five major public water supply well fields, as of the most recent data I've seen on the DNR website, produced in aggregate at less than 40% of their rated capacity. So there's clearly some room for expansion there, and that may explain the comment Tim made that Citizens Water has looked out to the future and they may be able to ramp up production from those well fields. And to that, I would also add that the capital cost of producing drinking water from groundwater is dramatically less than from surface water for a variety of reasons I won't go into right now. But that probably explains Tim's comment earlier.
We are talking about the proposed Mounds Lake project. If you would like to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Twitter @WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Tom did and reach out to us on Facebook @NoLimitsWFYI. Tom says that he'd like to know how or if it could affect the possibility of flooding in Broad Ripple and the North Side flood reduction efforts. Tony, I'm going to stay with you on that one, but I'm going to give everybody a shot at it because I suspect you all are going to have a viewpoint on that. Tony, if you get us started.
I have to be honest, I'm not that familiar with the flood issue in great detail. I'm aware that they do have flood issues in Broad Ripple, some of which is due to past, you know, historical building in the floodplain. And to that extent, sure, a dam would probably reduce flooding, but without seeing the specifics, it's hard to say when, under what circumstances, or by how much.
Okay. Tim, I'm going to let you go next on this one. Let Chad have the last word.
Sure. There have been a lot of efforts to reduce flooding in Indianapolis along the river because of some of the low-lying neighborhoods that are at risk, and some of that work has involved levee construction and levee renovation has been what we've seen most recently. So I think those plans accommodate for flooding concerns, I think, potentially regardless of what would happen that far upstream in Anderson. But it may be that the effect of the Mounds Reservoir would be to reduce flows so much down here that it would cause other environmental concerns in terms of in-stream flows that are necessary to protect aquatic life. And so that's something that, you know, certainly needs to be evaluated in terms of the effects of the reservoir project.
Okay. Chad, I'm going to give you the last word.
Sure. Two comments. One, when we talk about the water supply issue, you know, we've done a fairly in-depth review of all the existing studies. And the city of Indianapolis and central Indiana started looking at this problem in the early 2000s. And there's been a number of studies performed. The general consensus of those studies is that there's a competing experts as to when this timeline falls. But at some point in the future, there is an operational need for more water in central Indiana. The other component that has not been thoroughly looked at in these studies is drought vulnerability. You only need to search back to 2012 and some very real-world experiences when you look at the impacts to the three reservoirs that were here in Indianapolis. The levels decreased dramatically. The appearance of the water quality, you know, did not look great because of the amount of sediment in those reservoirs. And the other thing I would point out is those reservoirs were constructed between the 1940s and 1970s. The population in central Indiana at that point in time was between 5 and 700,000 people. At this point, we're at about 1.8 million people. And the project contends that undoubtedly there will be an operational need for more water. And we talk about if there's more growth. Well, we certainly hope there's more growth. And one of the reasons that central Indiana has continued to grow and prosper with new population moving in, with companies locating here, is the quality of our water supply. So we think that that is a major driver to this. But on the drought vulnerability piece, we think this is a fairly immediate need that this needs to be addressed. So that's one thing that we really feel strongly about, that this is a valuable resource to the central Indiana community. With regards to the flooding question, we believe, and this has not been thoroughly evaluated at this point, it would be in a subsequent phase of the project, that downstream communities will receive some flood relief based on our initial engineering calculations.
We are talking about the proposed Mounds Lake project here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Doug, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello. What's on your mind?
I live on the east fence of Mound State Park, and if the reservoir happens, my home will be within 100 yards of where the lake or reservoir will be. My concern is what happens to my well, what happens to my septic system, do I have to worry about the creek that runs through my property? And also, if they flood Mound State Park or parts of it, they will no longer have access to the campsite. And so is my home in danger of being taken by eminent domain because they need another way to get into the campsite?
All good questions. Thank you very much for the call, Doug. Chad, I think we'll start with you.
Sure. Mound State Park, from the beginning of this conversation, is of special importance to the project, given the mound formations and just the high number of citizens that utilize the park. A couple of just points that I'd like to make. You know, the mound formations, we all know, if you've been to Mound State Park, that the mound formations are wonderful. And there's two or three that stand out to people as, wow, this is just incredible. But there are actually 10 identified mound formations within the park. And the lowest mound formation is still approximately 30 feet higher than the projected level of the reservoir. In addition to that, undoubtedly, special consideration would be looked at to provide engineering controls at a fairly high level to protect those mounds. With regards to your specific questions about how your well and septic tank and potentially your home could be impacted. You know, these are all questions, and you're not alone. I mean, there are hundreds of people who will be impacted by this. And we are, and as we move through this process, we'll begin to understand on whose wells will be impacted, whose septic systems. Undoubtedly, if that home is to remain and your wells and septic systems will be impacted, there would be an infrastructure plan put in place to provide you those services. So that is foremost to the project. We have to provide those services if this project is to proceed.
We are talking about the proposed Mounds Lake project here on No Limits. My guests are Tim Maloney, Senior Policy Director of the Hoosier Environmental Council, Tony Fleming, a geologist and author of an exhaustive groundwater atlas of Marion County, and Chad Pigg, Project Specialist for the Corporation for Economic Development, Madison County. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the proposed Mounds Lake project here on No Limits. My guests are Tim Maloney, who is the senior policy director of the Hoosier Environmental Council, Tony Fleming, a geologist and author of an exhaustive groundwater atlas of Marion County, and Chad Pigg, project specialist for the Corporation for Economic Development, Madison County. You guys have some seriously long titles here. So I'm almost running out of wind getting to the end of them. We've got a Facebook question from a listener named Dan. If you'd like to reach out to us via Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. And his question is, what would average water temps be in a reservoir? Would milfoil and duckweed grow well? Who wants that one first? I guess I can start with you, Tim.
Yes, there would be problems. Once the reservoir is completed, it's very common for as soon as a artificial reservoir is filled up that it will start silting in as the water slows down coming downstream into the lake. The suspended sediment will fall out, and that will lead to shallower lake levels and more nutrients, and that encourages the growth of milfoil and American lotus and other aquatic vegetation that really will reduces the ability of the water to be a recreation resource in that case. And the siltation and nutrients also lead to the growth of blue-green algae, which is a persistent problem for reservoirs throughout Indiana, including Geist and Morse and Eagle Creek, which are all water supply reservoirs, are large state-managed reservoirs like Patoka, and Mississinewa and Salamone have that problem, and it's a persistent problem of reservoirs, and we don't have a good solution for those problems, and so we can expect those similar type of problems to occur at a Mounds reservoir as well.
Yeah, Dan's added a related question. Is there significant ag and non-point runoff upstream of this proposed dam, Chad?
Sure. There are some non-point source impacts upstream of
probably ought to explain what a non-point.
Sure.
Yeah.
Non-point source. Maybe the easiest way to do it is a point source discharge is like a discharge pipe from a wastewater treatment plant or an industry or something that's directly going into a stream or a river. A non-point source is runoff from an agricultural field or a parking lot that is less defined on where it enters the water, the stream, but nonetheless does enter the stream and potentially cause some impacts. One of the ways we're looking at this project is how can we integrate some of the best solutions from around the country that have been looked at on other reservoirs or other water bodies like this? And one of the things that's unique about this area is the topography and the variation in topography. We have very steep banks of what would become the reservoir near the dam to where we can store a high volume of water. But as we move further upstream, we have an area that's fairly flat. And so what we've looked at with respect to addressing these non-point source impacts is potentially a low-head dam at an upstream location that by design, water will flow into from the river into an open water body, slow down, drop out sediment. And where the sediment goes, the nutrients go, essentially, because the nutrients are generally bound up to the sediment, to capture sediment in one location, as opposed to having to incur expensive dredging projects in the future. We would work into the operation and maintenance plan frequent dredging projects in that particular area as opposed to the entire water body. And we believe if we can stop the sediment there, we can keep the water quality in the main pool much better than otherwise. One other point that we've really thought a lot about, this non-point source issue, is part of the mitigation strategy, which we haven't talked about, is, you know, is we do want to create as many natural opportunities and protect other high-quality ecological assets in the Madison County and Delaware County area. And we've looked at, can we identify those upstream agricultural users, and would it be possible to potentially acquire property and create buffer strips to improve the quality of the White River as it comes to the reservoir and in the reservoir? So those are some strategies we're looking at.
We are talking about the proposed Mounds Lake project here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. John, welcome to the program. Understand you're calling all the way from Evansville.
Yes. I wanted to make a couple of points. I've dealt with the Wabash Canal earlier in my career, and I found that a couple of points I'd like to make. Dam construction is the most environmentally destructive thing man can do besides war, in my opinion. And second, it's pretty disingenuous to say you want to build a reservoir that's a flood control reservoir and a water supply reservoir, because a water supply reservoir you want to keep at its maximum level. A flood control reservoir you want to keep at the minimum level. So, in effect, you're causing a reservoir to have to be two or three times the size it would have to be to serve either function. It doesn't make sense to try to do both, and I think that's just a disingenuous argument to use both. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, John. Chad, I'll give you a chance to respond.
Sure. Briefly, the primary function of this reservoir is water supply, undoubtedly. You know, any flood control mitigation measures that do occur downstream, and we do believe there will be some, just as the natural function of creating the reservoir, is an added benefit.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named John saying, Chad mentioned that Indy's reservoirs had water quality issues during the 2012 drought, especially with blue-green algae. These reservoirs have relatively small watersheds. Given that the Mounds Reservoir would receive water from a 400-square-mile agricultural watershed, what steps will be taken to keep nutrients out, and how does the city of Anderson propose to pay for these efforts? And I'll start with you, Chad, but I'm going to give everybody a shot one. That's a weighty question.
It sure is, and we cover a lot of ground there. But again, going back to the earlier discussion, is, you know, this non-point source impact issue is a major concern for us. Nobody wants to create a reservoir that has these water quality concerns, and either prohibits recreational use or even makes the water difficult to treat for its major intended purpose. So as I mentioned earlier, we're looking at ways to capture that sediment at the headwaters of the reservoir, looking at identifying non-point source areas upstream of the reservoir, and can we, as part of our mitigation strategy, address those, that being agricultural, potentially neighborhoods with failing septic systems that are entering legal drains, those kinds of things. How can we maximize the benefit of this project to the communities that are most directly going to be impacted by the project?
Okay. Tony, I'm going to give you the next word, and let Tim finish us off.
Thank you. I am presently looking at a water quality assessment of the West Fork White River by the U.S. Geological Survey, and it points out that the basin is 75% agricultural. In the central Indiana till plain, that means 75% or more of the land is drained artificially with drainage tiles, which enter the river throughout its length or its tributaries. Numerous studies show that the water that comes out of those drainage tiles is highly enriched in nutrients, in organic compounds such as pesticides and herbicides. I'm noting here in this report by the USGS, they found they tested for 277 different compounds, and they did this over a period of time. Of those 277, 50 were present in at least 20% of the source water samples all the time. This is more than just buying a few buffer strips, because you're dealing with the drainage of hundreds of square miles that are used for agriculture. And unless you're planning to tell those farmers that we're not going to drain your land anymore, there's not a whole lot you can do about that right now just with buffer strips or other common methods like that. That is the source of a lot of these non-point source contaminants in the river.
Tim, you get the last word.
Sure. Well, I think this discussion points to one of the many flaws of the reservoir project is the level of engineering solutions that would be required to try to deal with or prevent all of these likely problems that will occur from in terms of concentrating the water quality problems in the new lake if it's built, rather than simply doing a more thorough and holistic look at what we need to do to meet our water supply. And Tony mentioned earlier about the availability of groundwater resources in central Indiana, and you just look at what Muncie has done here recently in revamping four of their city's water wells, or Indiana American's water wells, and increased their capacity by one-third just from those four water wells. So clearly, the opportunity to meet our water needs in a more sustainable way without destroying a high-quality riverine resource like we have along the West Fork White River and Mound State Park and all those great resources that Anderson should really be looking at as a community asset rather than taking the approach of the reservoir.
We are talking about the proposed Mounds Lake project here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Mary, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John Kroll, and I want to thank you also for this opportunity to air the issue. This has not hitherto been done in Anderson. First, my question is, who will control the real estate development around the lake? What entity will be condemning private land so that others can receive profit from its redevelopment? This being also from the Commons, our White River. I was concerned about the 400 homes that would be flooded and 50 businesses, the people, have heard that, they'll be living better elsewhere than they are now. Could you please address this?
Certainly. Thanks very much for the call and the questions, Mary. Chad.
Sure. This issue with regards to the impact to people's homes is something that we all take very seriously. And as far as who would control this, the next step in this process would be the formation of what's being called the Mounds Lake Commission, which would actually be made up of local government officials from the area. And they would guide this project forward from there. With respect to the individual property owners and the people's homes who would be impacted, we've talked with, I think, nearly all the individual property owners, people who are renting, people who own. And undoubtedly, there will be a very small percentage of people that we do have to go through the proper proceedings and the tools that governments have at hand for these kinds of projects to acquire their property. We believe the vast majority of properties will be acquired under just more conventional willing buyer, willing seller. It's interesting. You know, many of the businesses in the area are actually for this project. They recognize that Anderson has been depressed for quite a long time, and this is one piece of the puzzle. That adds a benefit. You know, our goal is, and with regards to controlling development, certainly it's not the project's will to control development. undoubtedly the commission would form some guidelines, but within those guidelines, private entities would be able to develop what could be permitted and move through the process. So I think we've been very sensitive to the property owners, and we've heard repeatedly that people appreciate the efforts we've made in that regard.
Well, Chad, I'm going to stay with you for a second. I mean, we've been somewhat remiss here in not talking about what stage this project
sure.
is at. Where are things? I mean, how soon would this become a reality if everything went forward?
Yeah, John, that's a great question. And basically where we're at right now is, and, you know, this is still an idea and a concept. This is not a, you know, this is not a permitted project that we're going to go out and start acquiring property for next week. So we've looked at this basically in four phases. Phase one was concept development. Can this, you know, could this really happen? Phase two was an investigation of feasibility. Feasibility from a few different perspectives. The conventional engineering questions that would come up, the environmental questions that would arise, and the financial questions that would arise. We're at the tail end of phase two, or this feasibility stage. And the final reports that are being generated will be completed in the next few weeks. And from that point, we're looking at forming this Mounds Lake Commission. Once the commission is formed, we move into what's being termed phase three, which is essentially the permitting phase, which is I wanted to take a few minutes and talk about if I can, and that the permitting for this is going to be rigorous. We've had initial conversations with many state and federal environmental agencies and been told that the scrutiny will be intense on this, as well it should be, given that we're talking about a drinking water resource for generations to come. With regards to the comments about destruction of a natural resource, we believe it's changing the natural resource. We are going to inundate or flood certain areas that have high quality trees and those things. We believe we can identify and protect other areas that are currently subject to development or destruction really without a whole lot of oversight as part of this project. The final phase would be property acquisition and construction of the reservoir. So we're still 2 to 3 years out before we would be talking about actually acquiring anyone's property for this, and that couldn't be done until we understand if we can permit the project at all. And to permit the project, we actually have to demonstrate a water need to the state and federal agencies.
And I'm going to stay with you for just a second, because I realize the other thing we haven't sort of gotten talked about is the price tag for all of this. I think Tim alluded to it at one
sure.
point. How much are we anticipating that this would cost, and where does the money come from?
Yeah. So, you know, just to start with where we're at in the process right now, phase two was actually funded through a state of Indiana grant to look more in depth at whether this can actually happen or not from an engineering standpoint. As we move forward, the third phase of this, the permitting phase, we'd be looking at a potential variety of funding sources, being state and federal grants, potentially some private investment. Where we get into, you know, the meat of this is when we actually start talking about property acquisition and construction, the total price tag on the project from day one till the time it's completed is $350 to $400 million, which is a substantial amount of money. And undoubtedly, there will be, again, more potentially state and federal resources that go into that. But ultimately, there has to be an outlet and a sale for a future sales of some of this water. It would be funded in a very similar way to a community that wanted to upgrade a water treatment plant, and they're bonding against future projected revenues. We would have to be able to do that in order to fund the construction and ultimately the maintenance of this project.
It's a simple question, but who would own the water? I mean,
yeah.
Is that ultimately, I mean,
yeah,
it sounds to me like you, if it's for all of central Indiana, but it's located in one county or
yeah.
one municipality, what are the options there?
So the current thinking, and we are still in feasibility, of course, so this could go a couple of different ways, but currently the thinking is that the Mounds Lake Commission would create a water utility, and they would own the reservoir, essentially, as this move forward through process. But there are certainly other scenarios that could still come to light as we move through this. Earlier, so that cost of $400 million on the upper end, there was a study performed in 2010 by a national engineering firm looking at options to supply water to central Indiana, and this was actually the least costly option. You know, conservation and groundwater can play a role, but it's not the complete solution.
We are talking about the proposed Mounds Lake project. My guests are Tim Maloney, Senior Policy Director of the Hoosier Environmental Council, Tony Fleming, a geologist and author of an exhaustive groundwater atlas of Marion County, and Chad Pigg, Project Specialist for the Corporation for Economic Development, Madison County. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. If you're just joining us, we're in the middle of a pretty spirited conversation about the proposed Mounds Lake Project. My guests are Tim Maloney, who is the senior policy director of the Hoosier Environmental Council, Tony Fleming, a geologist and author of an exhaustive groundwater atlas of Marion County, and Chad Pigg, project specialist for the Corporation for Economic Development of Madison County. We've gotten a Facebook question from a listener named Jill, and I'm going to throw this one, I think, your way first, Tim. It says, is it even legal to destroy, flood a state-dedicated nature preserve? And if we flood the preserve at Mounds, does this establish a precedent that could be used to destroy more nature preserves?
That's a great question, and in our mind, it would create a very negative precedent for opening up other state lands, state-dedicated nature preserves, which is a dedication that is supposed to protect that area in perpetuity, that would put those kind of designations and protections at risk. And in the end, I think it would really require the state's consent for the Mounds Fen to be converted, and it would also require review by the National Park Service as well in terms of impacts to Mounds State Park, because some of that land was acquired through use of National Land and Water Conservation Fund monies. So there are some very significant hurdles for this project to go through before it would ever be permitted or approved. And that's simply one of those many obstacles that that lie in wait for this project.
We've got an email question from a listener named Tom that's right on point to that, that is directed specifically toward Tony. Wanted you to explain what a fen is.
Okay, a fen is a type of wetland that is supported by groundwater coming to the surface. In other words, it is a groundwater-dependent ecosystem. And so what happens typically is as groundwater travels through the subsurface, in this case through bodies of sand and gravel, over time it dissolves some of the minerals of that aquifer media. And when it comes to the surface, those minerals precipitate out right at the point of discharge, and typically it produces a material called tufa, which is a form of limestone, and so it produces a highly alkaline environment. And in particular at Mounds Fen is very unusual because the groundwater is coming out at various places on the side of the bluff. And this mineral material that's crystallizing out literally forms curtains, and it's called a hanging fen. And they are very rare. I only know of one other one in Indiana, and they're not common anywhere. And they support very unusual plants that you don't find in a lot of other places. So a fen, in summary, is a groundwater-dependent ecosystem with highly alkaline characteristics.
Tim, you wanted to add something.
I just wanted to speak quickly to this issue of mitigation and the idea that really any environmental impact can be tolerated as long as we can mitigate it. And we would take great issue with that. And let's look quickly at the mitigation issues here on the proposed Mounds Reservoir. Tony was just talking about the Mounds Fen, a very complex system that we don't even understand fully, so our ability to replace that through a man-made process is just not possible. You're also looking at the flooding and drowning of nearly 1,000 acres of hardwood mature forest And if the project were to be held to the standard bottom land forest and forested wetland mitigation ratios that the permitting agencies typically require of a 3-to-1 or 4-to-1 replacement ratio, you're looking at 3,000 to 4,000 acres of new forest land that would have to be restored somewhere, and clearly a field of 5-foot tall tree seedlings don't replace a mature hardwood forest for 100 years or more. So the mitigation issue is not that simple. It's very complex, and we simply can't replace through mitigation 7 miles of a high quality riverine ecosystem.
We are talking about the proposed Mounds Lake project here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please call us at 866-476-3881. Greg, welcome to the program.
Hello, how are you doing today?
Doing fine. What's on your mind?
Well, one of my questions was actually answered earlier or alluded to, but I've heard, and I don't know if this is true, and I don't know if your guests can answer this, that Geist indeed is a water reservoir, correct, for Indianapolis?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Nodding your heads, guys, doesn't work that well on radio.
Yes,
we have to speak. Okay. Okay.
And has that reservoir has it ever been drawn on to supply water to Indianapolis during a drought?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, yes, on a regular basis.
Okay. I had heard somewhere that it's never been used, which got me thinking about a reservoir that's paid for partially by taxpayers, and then wealthy residents spring up around it, and then it doesn't really get used for its purpose. I just wanted to toss that out there because I didn't know if that was indeed true or not. But you've answered my question, so thank you.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Greg. Well, I want to ask something because it sounds like what this is really kind of boiling down to is a discussion about on one side trying to create a sustainable source of water with some economic development possibilities for a depressed region, and another we're talking about what is a fairly significant, I think both sides would agree, is a fairly significant environmental impact. Both of those are worthy considerations and valuable ones. Is there a way to try to split the difference here? Are there ways to achieve the effect or mitigate some of the concerns? And I guess in some ways this is the cue, Tim, for you to put your alternative plan on, and then I'm going to give Chad a chance to say why that might not work.
Yes, our alternative proposal that we've developed in cooperation with folks in Anderson and Muncie is to establish a linear park and trail system along the White River from Muncie to Anderson that we would call the Mounds Greenway. It's both a land conservation project in that it would protect the habitats and lands along the river on each side, the forests and wetlands that exist there now, and also develop trail access, a connecting trail from the trails of City Trails of Muncie to the City Trails of Anderson. By doing that, we think that would provide a real economic opportunity for those two communities as well as the small towns in between. And we would do that by protecting a natural resource rather than destroying one. And so we think it would really add to the area's quality of life and be an economic benefit. It doesn't directly address the issue of water supply, but as we've discussed here and in our research, the reservoir is not the best approach to our water supply needs, and there are a lot of alternatives that need to be fully explored. And again, you just look at what Citizens Water is doing, and they're saying we can add 82 million gallons a day to our water supply here in central Indiana over the next 25 years and do it for much less cost and without building a reservoir, do it through conservation, system efficiencies, more use of groundwater. So to leap to the high-cost alternative without that kind of a thorough assessment and at the same time destroying such a great natural resource is just not the best way to go, in our view.
Chad.
Sure. So we would wholeheartedly agree that there is great value in creating a trail network, and that's actually part of our overall strategy to create and enhance natural opportunities. Where I think we would depart is that we believe that there is a water need, if not immediately, in the very near future, and certainly we do need an additional resource for drought vulnerability. And as we've looked at, you know, as we look at these options, this really is one of the most economic options that are out there. And I mean, that's hard to believe for people, but, you know, the other options that have been considered, I mean, everything from actually creating a pipeline from the Ohio River, which I don't believe would ever be permitted for a number of reasons, extremely costly. The operation and maintenance is also extremely high. Those kinds of things just are not viable. The other point I'd like to make is, I mean, we've talked about these environmental impacts a lot on the river. I believe there is an inherent check and balance with the state and federal permitting process. If we can successfully work through that process, and if the state and federal agencies, you know, agree that this project has merit and continue to move it forward, then I think we've cleared that hurdle. The last point I would make is, again, that's part of the process. We're not saying that this is going to happen tomorrow. This is a marathon with hurdles, is the analogy that has been put out there a number of times. And so moving into the permitting process, we have to clear some more hurdles here.
We've gotten a couple of related questions via Facebook. And if you want to reach out to us via Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. One says, what environmental groups might be invited to sit on the future Mounds Water Commission board? And the other was, what environmental groups have had actual input to the planning work done so far? Chad, I'll start with you.
Sure. As far as what the actual commission looks like, you know, there's going, the main body of the commission is going to be elected officials. And it looks, and one option that would be considered would be to develop some sort of an advisory board, which would include environmental groups that would have input to the appointed officials that are part of that make up the commission. With respect to, you know, what has been done up to this point, there has been literally dozens of public meetings where environmental groups have expressed concerns and issues. We had an intense week-long public outreach session at several locations, in three different communities within the impacted area, where we invited the public, we invited people that were for the project, against the project, to come and talk about their concerns. So, and certainly, you know, the lines of communication, we want to keep those open with people who do have these concerns. We need to hear the viewpoints and address those as we move forward.
We are talking about the proposed Mounds Lake project here on No Limits. Ron, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I do want to congratulate some of your guests on a fairly entertaining dog and pony show as far as the development and everything that they have kind of danced around that's going to take place if this does get built. I said, because we've seen it happen before time and time again, that well-connected developers, public officials, will end up being the ones that step in, that know the loopholes, that know their way around the system, and the taxpayers are going to get stuck footing the bill for developers and officials to make gobs and gobs and gobs of money. I mean, we've seen it at Geist. We've seen it time and time again when you start talking about these type of projects, the control completely goes away. You know, I can't see, if you want to build a reservoir, that's fine, but make it an absolutely no development area or a very, very small percentage and leave it for recreation and not build houses and build things around it. I mean, if we need the water, that's fine, but don't spend the money so somebody else can get rich off of my back.
Okay, thank you. Thanks very much for the call, Ron.
John, could I respond to that?
Yeah, sure.
I would point out that in virtually every other state that uses surface water as a water supply, particularly reservoirs they've constructed in the Midwest, the states or the water utility owns easements along those reservoirs and in the watershed that specifically prohibit certain kinds of development and activities that compromise water quality. And in Indiana, as the caller alluded to, we have seen no such thing, which may explain why there's such a blue-green algae problem in some of our water supplies. But beyond that, I would like to mention that, again, I'll come back to the Chamber of Commerce water study. A key point they made in there regarding water supply is the use of something called induced recharge or induced infiltration. When you drill a well, typically you think of a vertical borehole, and there's a screen, you know, somewhere down below the surface to bring in the water wherever the aquifer is, whether it's 100 feet or whatever. With induced infiltration, it flips that on its side. You have a horizontal well below the water table, and the whole thing is basically a screen. And when you pump it, you induce river water to recharge the aquifer. This is not some hypothetical idea. It is actually used by a couple of cities further south along the White River. And the Chamber of Commerce study said this was one of the most promising methods, as yet unexplored, but promising methods for central Indiana to boost its water supply. So my point here is there is more potential for groundwater development than you might think.
And we've got like a minute and a half left, so I've got a couple of some questions, and I apologize to all of the listeners whose questions we aren't going to be able to get to. We will continue talking about this. Facebook question from a listener named Joe says, when and where can people in municipalities who live downstream from this project have the opportunity to provide input? Will there be public hearings for the permits, Chad?
Undoubtedly. All of these state and federal permits we're talking about have prescribed public input periods. And, you know, we encourage people for, against, whatever your point of view is, reach out, make your position known during those opportunities.
And then one from Susan who says, what would happen to the reservoir plans if one or more local government bodies refuse to participate in the Mounds Lake Commission?
Well, at this point, because we're still talking about moving this through a feasibility and permitting stage, the project would still continue. As to what that entity wanted to do in the future, that's yet to be seen. So we certainly would not want to stop the project because one entity said, nope, we're not interested. We would at least want to move through permitting and see how this proceeds.
So, and how long, again, is that permitting process?
Estimated to be 2 to 3 years.
Okay. And I think I'll give you one quick word here, Tim.
Just quickly on the question of public participation, folks should not wait until the permitting stage to weigh in. It's entirely appropriate to weigh in now with Governor Pence, the mayors in the affected cities, and Anderson, Muncie, and the communities in between about what they'd like to see happen here.
And I think that will have to be the last word for now, but clearly we need to talk a lot more about this. I'd like to thank my guests, Tim Maloney, Tony Fleming, and Chad Pigg, and I'd like to thank all of our listeners who called in. We will get to all of your questions. It may just take another show. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.